This week on DMT, a cacophony of news on music streaming services as Beats gets Daisy funding, Tesco moves on music for Blinkbox, and Google goes its own way. Also, some thoughts on music bookmarking and a report from EMI's Innovation Challenge. Hello everyone, and welcome to Digital Music Trends, the weekly show covering the latest news in the music tech industry. DMT is available as audio and video on iTunes, most podcatchers, SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. So this week, I'm really happy to welcome back to the show two great guests. And first up is Karim Fanouz from Music Ally. So hi, Karim, and how's it going?
Hey, Andrea. Very good. Good to be here. Thanks for having me back.
Great. And then we have Sid Lawrence, developer and evangelist at Twilio, as well as founder of We Make Awesome Shit, and also collaborator in Tomahawk. So hi, Sid, and thanks for being on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Great. So let's get started right away, and then we can talk about a little bit about your projects and how things are going towards the end of the show. And I was going to start with some of the freshest news of the week, which only came out last night. And first up, Beats Audio appears to have closed a round of funding targeted towards the development of a DAISY. So this round is valued at around $60 million, and it's led by billionaire Len Blavatnik. And his company Access Industries. So the company is really invested in the music space since they actually own Warner Music. So it can be more invested than that, really. And they acquired that for $3.3 billion in 2011. There's a number of other investors involved, of course, but Access Industries seems to be the leading investor for this round. So the other interesting thing is that Beats will not be remaining DAISY will not be remaining under Beats' wings for long. It looks like the company will be spun off later this year once it launches. And so first of all, some thoughts on this round. It's a very big round for a company that has just basically announced its service. It hasn't even released anything or shown what it's going to do. So Karim, is it a too big a round, or do you think it's what the company needs to actually enter this market with a bang and try and get some market share?
Well, I think if we look at the other big investments recently, so we've seen $130 million in Deezer and $100 million in Spotify. So it's smaller than that. There's going to be an almighty battle royale in the next few years to dominate mainstream landscapes. So I think services do need as much as they can get to achieve scale quickly. And it's up against those other big guys. So I think, it is a significant round of funding, but the more the better, really. I thought another interesting thing about all of this, well, I wondered whether spinning off from DAISY would be a problem for it, because I really like the close alignment with the Beats brand and the potential to bundle in with headphones and things like that. But what they're saying, that shouldn't be lost. And the other interesting thing about it is that, someone who's got a label has a stake now in Deezer and also has a stake in the new DAISY service. And I think that's quite interesting strategically. So those are my thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely. And Sid, from your side, DAISY comes out of the gates with a huge round of funding, without having gone through the first, of course it has gone through a first huge development with Mog, because that's going to be built on top of Mog, but it's essentially going to be a separate service. So do you reckon that, this kind of money is going to be targeted especially towards the development of the platform, or is going to be used for marketing purposes, or what do you reckon about that?
Well, I hope it's not for the development of the platform. I would hope it was for marketing, because if you were to give me that amount of money, I'm pretty certain we could make something pretty good.
Awesome.
You definitely, it's always a case of the more money you've got to spend on marketing, the better you're going to do, right?
Yeah.
Like, you, with decent marketing, you can sell ice to an Eskimo. So, as long as they put it towards marketing and they don't just spunk it up the wall, then I think it's got a good chance of doing well. It's definitely going to do well amongst the kids with the Beats brand.
Yeah.
How many teenagers do you see wearing Beats headphones? Like, you see more people wearing Beats headphones than you do seeing wearing iPhone headphones, right?
Yeah, sure.
And that was a big time when everyone had these white headphones. So, I think it's definitely got a chance. Whether we need yet another streaming service is to be decided and to be seen. But yeah, I think it's got a good chance amongst the kids. I think that that's where the main market will be, the teenagers, the ones who are currently using YouTube.
Yeah.
But it will, we'll see, because obviously with Google and YouTube potentially going into a subscription service or potentially going into a bigger streaming service, it will be interesting to see how it pans out.
How it pans out, yeah. And Kareem, like, looking at the marketing side, it's been an interesting ride for streaming services. I think they're finding it quite difficult to really figure out how they want to market themselves and how to reach the audience that is best suited for them. For example, I remember being in New York in November and seeing all these huge billboards of RDO in Times Square and in all sorts of other places, which seems like an odd sort of old style marketing campaign for a streaming service. So have you seen anything else on the marketing side that kind of you thought was interesting and a good way for the services to get the word out?
Well, I think, you know, what we've seen is kind of subtle but sure rollouts of these services. The billboard thing was interesting to me. And often I've seen, you know, on gigs from the US side of things, you've seen the Rhapsody kind of symbol attached to some exclusive gigs, which has been quite mainstream.
Yeah.
But we haven't seen such mainstream marketing yet, which is why the alignment with Beats, you know, the brand is really, really interesting. Yeah. And I think, you know, as streaming becomes more mainstream, we'll see more of a reach into advertising channels. But no, I think we've got to see all of that. I think that's all coming now.
Yeah. And, you know, Daisy was officially announced in January and the launch is expected in the second half of 2013. So, you know, of course, one other thing that we need to think about is how the service is placing itself now as a music discovery platform that will beat all other streaming services to the punch in terms of offering the best discovery service. But this comes against, you know, a background where, for example, Spotify is supposed to be releasing a new desktop client that will encourage discovery much more than it currently does. So Sid, what are your thoughts on the Spotify situation with the desktop client? It seems to be late. That we haven't heard anything since the December announcement, I think it was. It's been 4 months. And so they must be running late, I guess, with the development, but it's still an interesting take, and it could really like beat Daisy to the punch if Spotify turns out to be really an amazing discovery experience.
I mean, discovery is the thing that everyone's trying to crack. And I mean, it all depends what direction they go in. It seems like Spotify are going to be trying to go down like the Twitter direction of discovery, where you follow different people. But then, like, that's very similar to MySpace, for example, and the new MySpace. And obviously the new MySpace, well, we're all using that still, right?
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's going to be interesting. As long as they don't go down the friends route, because I think the thing that people try and go down is the friends route. Actually, my friends don't listen to the same music as I do. Like, most of them don't. Sure, there's a few odd ones that do, but most of them don't. And then if you, like, then there's the down the route where everyone is going down, which is just using Echo Nest. Now, then you get the same discovery on every platform, on every app, Luke.
Yeah.
Most of them are, I mean, Echo Nest is great, right? I absolutely love Echo Nest. I think the fact that we can get the danceability of a song from Echo Nest is amazing.
Yeah, great. Yeah.
But the fact that everyone is using them as the recommendation engine is iffy at best.
Yeah.
Because then it's the same stuff. And that just, although it works, it's better than nothing, it's still not quite perfect.
Yeah.
And I think it's the curated route. Like, we still... I still read Drowned in Sound and get music recommendations from blogs, because I quite like the fact that it's a human with similar taste. And so it's going down the tastemaker route. So as long as Spotify get the tastemakers on board, otherwise you'll just get other random people who don't really care what their music interest is. I think that's the problem that MySpace has got, is that for the recommendation service to actually work, people have to use it. So yeah, it's a funny one. It will be interesting to see when it comes out.
For sure. I mean, we're all waiting to see what it's going to look like, essentially. Both for Spotify and for Daisy. And we were saying in our first run of the show, because this is the second take, we had some technical difficulties at the beginning, to say the least. We were talking about how, you know, there's so many streaming services that are coming out of the gates, and it's a very exciting field. There's so much money going around, but there's also the problem of all the services needing to scale to a certain level to actually make any money, because we know that streaming is a scale business. And so the idea being that aside from the services that are funded by somebody like Google, that has money to throw away and probably wouldn't mind if they were losing money for quite a long time on a service like that, there are other investor-led services that are likely to go away, you know, by, you know, in the next, 12 to 24 months, if they don't reach the numbers that, that they need to reach in order to become somehow profitable or close in profitability. So, so Karim, do you reckon like this is the case? And you know, do you think that somebody like Google or somebody like, for example, HTC that does own Beats, that is going to be, you know, still linked to Daisy, they're going to be more resourceful in the sense that they can spend money that investors might not be willing to put in the long term?
Yeah, or they have access to the right amount of people already. I mean, I think there are two points to make. One that, you know, as I was joking with you guys earlier, my favorite slide to show this year has been a big goldfish bowl with a very, very oversized, sorry, a small goldfish bowl with an oversized goldfish in it holding a guitar. And the you know, the thing behind that is that there are a lot of streaming services out there, whether they're standalone or, you know, part of the media giants kind of offering. And then there's just not room for all of them in the same shape that they are taking at the moment. So I think there will be an almighty battle, and we will see some fall away after this kind of big investment and attempts to scale quickly and all of the fierce competition that will come with that. And I think people like YouTube have a natural advantage. I think it was Francis Keeling who said that, you know, Google have the biggest funnel around in YouTube. And it's this young audience that Sid was just talking about as well. So... I think they do have big advantages, and you know, when will Apple come to the table? You know, if/when. I mean, we think if is a definite, really, but you know, when that happens, that might be a big shift-changing moment as well. I think it'll be really interesting. I just want to point out, sorry, add one thing to our discussion.
Sure.
Your question about the brand advertising, because I did remember some things that I've noticed along those lines. Obviously, Deezer has had some publicity via Orange on television in the UK, and I was quite impressed by Microsoft advertising, especially during the Homeland series. So there was a lot of advertising around Microsoft and its hardware and content ecosystem. So it wasn't just about music, it was about all the types of content offered and the way you can listen across platforms and pick up where you've left off. So I thought that was very interesting, mainstream kind of advertising, slightly different. So yeah, I just wanted to throw in.
That's great. Sid, should Apple come into this field, or is it too crowded already for them? It's a million-dollar question.
Whether they should or not, I'm not sure if there's a right answer. Whether or not, if they did and they sweeps up, I think is a possibility. I mean, the thing with iTunes and Apple, right, is that they, although they make money from iTunes, it's mainly to get people to buy their devices.
Yeah.
And if they had a streaming service, would it make them buy their devices? Because, I mean, let's be honest, streaming's not making many people much money. And Apple are a business that makes billions of dollars a month. And so should they do it? I don't know. I mean, if they were to, then they would definitely wipe up, because everyone's got their devices already. Like, sure, it's slowly moving away to Android, perhaps, but most Android users don't use their phones as smartphones. They use them as phones with Facebook. So I think it would be an interesting one if they were to come into it. There's been rumors that they're going to be, well, I think it was you mentioned earlier about the Daisy Apple connection, potentially.
They had a meeting. There was a meeting, apparently, this week.
I think that would be a bizarre scenario, because HTC is still some way in invested in Beats, are they not?
Yeah.
And obviously HTC is 51%.
One of the biggest actors. Yeah.
Right. So, oh, heavily invested then.
I think so, yeah.
And with HTC and their relationship with Android, I can't see Apple dealing with HTC.
And also, and just to add to that, I was interested in these rumors as well, but I think it's a no-go, because also, would Apple want to be working directly with one label that has an ownership stake in the service? I think they've all stood away from that sort of situation. So, that's something to add in there.
Yeah.
Apple are self-controlling. I mean, they want to control everything themselves, ideally. So I think, if anything, they would buy a streaming service or would make one themselves. But then you can stream albums on iTunes now, right?
Yeah.
Like, not many, sure. There's the odd one or two. And if they wanted to do it, they could switch it on tomorrow. I think they've got the tech in place. It's whether or not they're going to.
Yeah.
And I'm unsure if they will, because it's not going to bring them, it's going to eat away from their iTunes profits, which in themselves aren't exactly big. So I kind of am inclined to say that they're not going to, well, if Steve Jobs was still involved, I'd say they were not going to, because it's not a profit-making business.
Yeah.
But in the current climate with Apple and their current following and the way they're jumping on things, they've got to do something now that makes them cool again. And that could be the music streaming service. Because let's be honest, the thing about music is that it is cool. Everyone loves music. And which is why you're getting all of these investors investing in music companies, because they could invest in a tech company that is creating teleportation, which I still hope someone's going to do, because I would rather have teleportation than streaming.
Than streaming, yeah.
Or they can make watches with curved glass.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. I mean,
or just something so that we didn't have to sleep.
Oh, yeah. Like, oh, that would be amazing. I'd love that.
I mean, we can drop a buggy onto Mars from a crane, but we still have to sleep 8 hours a day.
I mean,
priorities are not in the right way.
I mean, from my point of view, the only way that I can see Apple partnering with a third party is because they try to go to the labels, and because of the fact that the labels know they have a boatload of money and it's Apple and they don't want to repeat the same mistakes they've done before, they might just ask for too much and Apple might back down and not actually be able to get to a deal with them, just because, you know, the labels are asking for a lot. Apple doesn't want to give a lot because it's always been a tough negotiator. And then it kind of comes to the heads there, and Apple has to go to a third party to provide the same type of service. That's the only thing that I can see happening with Apple not entering this market.
I think, that's a possibility. I mean, there was nearly a service launch, wasn't there? There was one deal that scuppered, I think it was Sony ATV at the end of last year. But for this, it feels like Apple are just scoping out what Daisy's going to do. They know who else is operating in the market. They know what Pandora's up to. They know Spotify's around, Movie Music's there, Rhapsody's there. So I feel like this was just, look, guys, what are you doing? They want to know what Daisy might do. More in terms of interest than partnership, I think.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to talk about quickly about Tesco and Blinkbox Music. So we're still staying on the streaming front. Just a couple of questions on what a supermarket chain is going to do with a music streaming service. So Tesco is a UK supermarket chain for US and worldwide listeners. They have started a video on-demand video service called Blinkbox late last year. That they acquired, and they've also acquired a couple of other companies to do with the music and the books industries. And the music company used to be called We7, is still around, but apparently it's going to be integrated in this new Blinkbox offering from the supermarket, from the retailer. So the interesting thing is that the whole thing around Blinkbox for the video front was the fact that they were like, oh, you know, we are great because we don't ask for subscription cash. It's just, you know, a rental model. It's a bit like, you know, having an Apple TV or, you know, just renting movies off iTunes. We don't charge a subscription, so it's great. And the whole campaign was based around that. If they do launch a We7-like service as the Blinkbox, you know, brand, how are they going to market it? Is it going to be still a subscription? Are they going to try some alternative models for monetization? I don't know. What do you guys think?
I this one got me thinking about the club card. Sorry to jump in. I was excited about this one because you got me researching the Tesco club card. And, you know, it's an amazing data play that they made a long time ago. You know, we forget that. They launched it in February, I think, 1995. Imagine the data they're gathering on people. And they've stated that if they launch Club Card TV initially online, it will have, I've got the quote somewhere, they'll be the most targeted TV adverts in the world. That's what Tesco said.
Wow.
So I think it could be really interesting if they manage to crack an advertising supported model because of the precision of their data. So I think that's what I think initially as an answer to your question.
Yeah. And We7 had really good relationships with advertisers as well, because they had an extensive play on the advertised-based sort of streaming model. So I guess that would make sense all around.
Have either of you used Blinkbox?
I haven't actually. I have
because.
And was it a good experience? Because I've tried to use it three times.
Right.
So
wasn't even a third time lucky.
Right. So they had a deal with like Peer Index or Clout or something, some random number generator online.
Yeah.
And I was fortunate enough to have a lucky random number that day. And I got like 3 free rentals from Blinkbox. And I thought I'd go and give it a go. I'm a big fan. I have Love Film subscription.
Yeah.
I use iTunes rentals. Me and my girlfriend love watching movies where we can rent them online. So I thought, hey, so a competitor to iTunes that might have different films. Went to Blinkbox, had 3 free rentals, loaded the first page. Every single video on the first page told me that I couldn't watch it in my region. Now, my region at the time was the UK, and it was from a service provided by Tesco's. And rather than it not even offering me, like, rather than it offering me videos that were available, every single featured thing on the homepage was not available in my region.
Wow.
Now,
that's a bug.
Anyone with, well, so you say that's a bug, right? So I then emailed Peer Index because I got an email from them to say, hey, I noticed that you signed up for free films at Blinkbox. How did it go? And I sent him an email going, I couldn't use it. The first page showed me nothing. I gave up.
Yeah.
And he was like, okay, interesting. I'll get the guys from Blinkbox to get in touch. So they sent me an email and they said, really, really sorry about it. Can you try again? So I revisited the page maybe like a couple of days later and it had the same thing again.
Yeah.
And so I gave up on the second time.
Yeah.
And then they're like, we fixed the bug. So I went and they showed me videos that were available in my region. So I then clicked on it, and for some reason, my account settings weren't working, or there was, basically, I gave up after the third time on using a service that originally I was quite excited by, and then tried to use it. I'm quite technical, as you guys may already know. The listeners won't know me, but I'm a reasonably technical guy, and I couldn't use it. So the fact that I couldn't use it and was put off by the experience straight away, I haven't gone back. And I can't imagine that if they were to release a music service, it would be any better. And it's the test goes like all over and over. Like what they offer is cheap services.
Yeah.
And sure, it might be a cheap music platform, but I can't imagine it working that well. And I can't imagine it being that easy to use. And I can't imagine it being that very good. But as long as they have the content there, then they'll think they've done a great thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I had a better experience than you. I mean, I have it on a LG smart DVD player.
Right. Yeah.
And that was pretty easy. They had a £5 offer where you could get £5 for free if you signed up. And I was missing a couple of episodes of Games of Thrones and they had the exclusive for the UK for season 2. So I got a couple of episodes through that and it was fine. So I can't say anything bad about it, but yeah, I mean, I agree with you that I think it's really hard for a company that has nothing to do with really with entertainment and media to come in and launch a service that is really successful and understands what the consumers want from that standpoint.
I mean, they're monolith.
I mean, one thing to... Right. Sorry, Sid, go on.
No.
Go ahead.
Oh, well, I was just going to say... They...
Got ya. I'm looking over. I got ya. No, you first. You first.
No, go ahead, Karim. It's fine.
All right. I don't think they can afford to fail, and they have a lot of money, and money buys consultants, and it buys, you know, I think in We7 they bought a good music service. Blinkbox, the TV side of it might be terrible. Hopefully they've changed. Yeah. But it's this thing that they need to keep people in their ecosystem and that they feel threatened by your Amazons. For example, personally, I had some amazing biscuits the other day. Where did I look for them? I looked for them on Amazon. That's where I get stuff. That's where I buy, you know, videos. I've got a Love Film subscription. That's where I buy CDs. I still buy CDs. You know, so I went to Amazon for my biscuits. How wrong is that from Tesco's point of view? You know, that's what they want to avoid. They want to avoid this cannibalization of customers. Yeah. And they have, I don't think they've got any choice but to put out services because they did it. They got CDs in store. They undercut the chains. And look, they won that battle. That was easy because all they had to get was a product in. Now they need to get the services right. I think that's really important. I think they know it and I hope that they're going to do it well.
And
avoid this disaster.
Yeah, of course.
We7 was ace. I mean, We7 is ace, right? So... like the fact that they bought a good platform hopefully will help them as long as they don't ruin it.
Yeah.
So they, yeah.
Yeah, it could work. I mean, just looking at everything that we're talking about, it's all to do with the huge players, huge companies, big chains, and people that have a lot of money. So basically, it leaves very little to work with for people that want to, that maybe have a really innovative idea and want to get into the market, but they don't have the huge advances that all of these companies have to pay, and the, you know, the huge capital investment of those. So I just wanted to touch briefly on a company like Omniphone, for example. They had a press release last week announcing a subscriber growth of 300% year on year. And, you know, of course, at the moment, they provide services to a lot of huge companies like BlackBerry, BBM, Sony Music Unlimited, and Rara. But when I spoke to the chief content officer, Jez Bell, at Medium, he said that their play for 2013 is really that they want to develop a suite of APIs that will be accessible to smaller companies to for potentially doing off-the-shelf licensing solutions, whereby somebody has a great idea for a music service that can, if they tick the boxes, you know, if it's the right type of license that they need, and it works with what Omniphone have, then they could potentially license the music directly from them for their service, which is interesting because it makes the level playing field a little bit easier for small companies to come in there. Of course, you know, there's a lot of question marks on price points and how much it's going to cost and whether it's going to be commercially feasible. But I don't know, I'd say that from a developer's perspective, do you think that we need more of these like bigger companies like 7Digital as well, like looking at doing stuff like that, trying to bring a big catalog of tracks to smaller developers that maybe have a cool idea and want to get it done?
I mean, but so what we, going back to like the scaling issue, right? What we really need is we need one streaming service.
Yeah.
And we need some, like the problem that we have with all of these different streaming services is that me as a developer, I make a music, some kind of recommendation engine or something that needs music. And I have the decision to make, which platform do I want to support?
Yeah.
Do I want to support Spotify and then do it as a Spotify app? And then I'm limited to Spotify subscribers. Do I want to use the Omniphone stuff, which is then limited to the Omniphone subscribers? So like the issue that we have is which service to supply and provide, right? Because you're totally limiting yourself. And as a developer, I am too lazy to integrate all 512 streaming services or however many streaming services there are now. I mean, in this call, we've chatted about seven. I've made that number up. I don't know if that is exactly how many we have.
Oh, more.
But it's right. So, I mean, which one to use? This is the whole point of Tomahawk, right? The whole point of Tomahawk is that we have one player and it doesn't matter what the user uses. It doesn't matter where they get their music from. And I mean, we've launched it's a hobby project. So, I mean, we're not claiming it's a business. We're not even claiming that it's polished.
Yep.
It's just, it answers various questions. And we launched a web API, a really simple thing that is just a JavaScript include that lets anyone hook all of these services into their web-based platform, app, whatever you want to call it. And we're seeing we've spent £0 on marketing, and we've got about 15 apps that are currently using it. I'm chuffed that we've got 15 because I rushed it together one day and thought, well, this would be a useful thing for people to use.
Yeah.
I find it hilarious how we're just getting more and more streaming services. And that's always going to be the issue because everyone always thinks that they can do it better. Like, oh, I can do it better. Well, what part of it can you do better? And most of them are such closed silos. They claim not to be. I mean, you've got Spotify, which has got like, it's got their apps and it's got their Lib Spotify stuff so that you can make mobile apps using Spotify and you can make desktop apps using Spotify. I mean, that's how we're using it for Tomahawk, right? But you can't do it on a website. You can't do it on SidLawrence.com. I can't have a music player that plays my favorite songs of the moment to my, like, if people are using Spotify. It doesn't work like that. Not really, like, you can embed a playlist, but I can't control the music. So I can't create a music quiz that uses Spotify. that plays the first 5 seconds of a song, unless I make it as a Spotify app that lives on the Spotify platform.
Yeah.
And then you've got like Deezer, which has got a Flash JavaScript SDK that lets people play their songs on the website. But then they don't have a way for desktop apps or I think they do have for mobile apps, but they don't for desktop apps to let desktop apps use it. Now, I like having a music player on the desktop. The reason why I like that is I don't accidentally close the tab.
Yeah.
I mean, that is why Spotify is doing so well. And RDO has now got a desktop app, which is the same as their web interface, but RDO still hasn't launched in the UK. Now, what I mean by launched is, have you seen any marketing in the UK of RDO being available?
Can't say I have.
Have either of you guys received a press release of the fact that they're available in the UK?
Yeah.
You have, or you have? Are you not sure?
I don't know. I know that a bunch of people got, you know, accounts and.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, they are available in the UK, but
yeah,
like they.
Yeah, I use them, but launched. I know what you're saying. That was there a big fanfare about a launch?
Yeah.
The only public statement they had was Ian, who was their lead developer, tweeting me saying, "I flipped the switch."
Yeah.
Like that was a public tweet, and that's the only real announcement that they've made that they're available in the UK. Yeah. But there's a lot of people who I know in the UK who use it because they've heard of it from us tweeting about it or whatnot,
yeah,
who like it, who prefer it to Spotify, but they haven't launched. And I find that hilarious.
Yeah.
I just don't understand why they haven't done it yet.
Yeah, it's been a long time. And Karim, what's your take on you know, consolidation of, I mean, what we're talking about here is consolidation of the back end, really, for these services, which is never going to happen because they're always going to be proprietary. So what do you reckon of a solution like Tomahawk or something along those lines to bring those together?
Well, it broke up a little bit. So, I heard you asking me about we're not talking about what OmniPhone are doing anymore. We're talking about all this stuff.
Yeah, trying to consolidate the back end of these services to try and find some common ground to create stuff that works across the board, which is never going to happen, of course. It's just a pipe dream. But something like Tomahawk, for example, might be able to give us something close to that.
Yeah, I'm a really big fan of Tomahawk. I use it. I like the idea of what it does. I do use, I use the other streaming services as well. And the nice thing that Tomahawk does is bring in all of those different sources. So we were chatting about, or you know, we might talk about, Wide and those sorts of services. And the problem, I think they're all really interesting, but the problem I have is I can't bring my streaming service library into them. And that's what Tomahawk does. So that's, whereas those sorts of services like Songdrop and Wide might be really good and look really nice and be really good for discovering other content in those formats, so YouTube, what have you, and SoundCloud sort of pinned in one place. Tomahawk brings all of that together, and I think that's a really, really big thing for me, and yeah, why I like it.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
I'll give you the fiver later.
Yeah, cheers. Yeah. Well, no, I mean, I do. I go between streaming services as well. So, I like RDO. I like the shape of it. I really like Spotify. I like the desktop apps. So I have different playlists in different places. So, Tomahawk does solve that and can pull in SoundCloud and YouTube as well.
Yeah.
So I think that's really good in principle. Whether I would use Tomahawk instead of, my current desktop player of the moment my current streaming player of the moment, I'm not sure, because there's the mobile element, and I know that's something I badger you about, Sid, but so I think that's possibly something that could help.
I will say that it is being worked on. The Android app, for example, it's at version 0.x. There are people actively working on it right now.
Awesome.
iPhone app yet to be started on.
Yeah.
If you're a developer in any way, shape or form, then you can get the code from GitHub and build it into an Android app and put it on your phone.
Will you be able to cache tracks through services? So, is that tricky? Is that where it gets tricky?
That's where it gets tricky. And that aspect we're yet to do.
Yeah.
There's been a few people approach us with regards to investment. I'm not the right person to speak to with regards to that. That would be Jason Herskovich. And it's something that has been discussed, and to get it to a marketable product, then we do need some kind of funding just to pay for things like legal or to pay to I mean, it's a hobby. None of us are working on it full time.
Yeah,
so
sure.
It's,
of course.
It's a funny one. It's a really funny one. I mean, I love working on it. I haven't touched it for a while, but I love working on it when I do.
Cool. Well, I wanted to chat about quickly about bookmarking services, just to touch upon them, because there's been a couple of companies coming out, you know, recently doing a bit of a push, like Wide.com and also SongDrop recently. And there's a few other services that are looking at trying to consolidate what is a listening experience online and bring it into a platform where people can just bookmark it, like, you know, on a... like you would do on Evernote or on Instapaper or whatever, on, you know, Pinterest. And it's just like, it's an interesting idea, but I just wanted to get a sense of what you guys think in terms of whether these companies can turn into actual businesses and how they can do so. I mean, a lot of the emphasis for them is placed on creating a community of fans and then leveraging that. But that requires a big scale for them to actually be able to do that. So I don't know, Karim, you've done a lot of startup assessing and looking at startups. So what do you think about bookmarking services for music?
Yeah, I mean, I think I just touched upon it. I think these are really nice looking services, and they do a good job, you know, on pulling on the content that they say they do. So there's Wide, there's SongDrop, there's Music Player, I think, in Germany. But my personal view on this, my personal issue is that what I do is I listen to streaming services and I have my playlist sort of in my current favorite streaming service. Then I have a YouTube subscription, I bookmark my favorite videos, and then I like SoundCloud and I like the community there. So I go to YouTube and SoundCloud to discover new stuff via the community.
Yeah.
So personally, I wouldn't use those services as much. You know, it's not my behavior, it's more siloed actually, and that's just the truth of it. And I wonder what the revenue model could be eventually. So it would have to be advertising, because I'm not sure how you build subscriptions into that and make it work. So I do really like what they're doing. I'm a big fan of any tech startup that sets out to accomplish something. And, you know, there's good discovery opportunities that bring together a few different types of content source. But for me, my behavior won't be changed by them. I think that's, you know, that's my answer to that question.
Yeah, sure. And Sid, taking Tomahawk aside, of course, because that'll probably work you know, pretty well for a lot of people on that front. You know, if you look at the wider, you know, mainstream consumers, what could those services work in some shape?
Well, so the funny thing is, right, we have bookmarking. We've got a browser bookmarklet that people can drag into their bookmarks bar on any website that either supports SoundCloud, YouTube, all of the standard ones, or also things like blogs like Drowned in Sound or like the BBC radio playlists or the iTunes charts or even Amazon, like whatever website you're on that has music, if you click the play now button, it pulls up a player that you can then play in Tomahawk on your desktop and then save it to a playlist for later. So like we actually already have bookmarking of music, but no one uses it. It's one of these things that is a great idea and then you use it for like a few days and then you don't ever use again because again, it's the same as Pinterest. It's the same as Fancy. Did you ever use a thing called Fancy Bar? Like Fancy Bar was another bookmarking service that I used for about a week, and then I forgot about it and I stopped using it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
siloed behavior. I think that's what it is. Like there was XFM as well, and again, that's fun and useful, but it stays in that silo, and I think that's the issue that we're all getting at. You know, and that's the problem with it.
Yeah.
So that's where, that's one of our things for Tomahawk, right, is that your Spotify playlists sync two ways. So you add a track in Tomahawk, whether it's by the bookmarklet, so you are bookmarking it for later, then you add it to your Spotify playlist and it syncs with your Spotify client.
Yeah.
Or it adds it to your last FM play history. Or soon we've got Facebook integration as well, so it adds to the music listens. It's out there and some people are using it. Like what I use Tomahawk mainly for nowadays, apart from listening to my playlist and stuff, is that if people are tweeting about a Spotify link or an audio link or a Deezer link, I can drag and drop it from Twitter into Tomahawk and it plays.
Yeah.
Like we the whole point of it is that I don't care where you listen to your music from. I don't even care where you find your music. All I care is that you can listen to your music and you can save it for later in a playlist.
Yeah.
So it's this funny one where, because Tomahawk does so much, there's so much that Tomahawk does that no one knows about or no one uses.
But it's also telling that people are not using that feature. If it is available, then you know it's something that tells you that maybe it's not as hot a feature as you'd think it would be.
So there are, like, I use it all the time. Yeah. There are people who do use it, but the majority of people don't use it. Maybe they don't know about it because, again, as I said, like, it's, well, you hidden. Wouldn't know about it.
Yeah, sure.
But those who know about it don't use it as much as you would have thought.
I think it's just a behavioral thing as well. We tend to like starring stuff and bookmarking stuff within our community. So that within the SoundCloud community or within the YouTube community, you see. So if you're doing something that's trying to bring all of that together in one place, I think it's just not as natural as you'd expect it to be for users.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to just, because I'm conscious of time, and I know Karim has to run in about 5 minutes, I just wanted to chat quickly about the EMI Innovation Challenge that Music Ally organized last night, and just to hear a little bit about what happened and about the startups that were there. Just give us a bit of a lowdown on what happened.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity to tell you about it. It was really good fun. We had 8 startups there. I'll just run through them really quickly. One was 45 Sounds. So that's about taking fan sort of crowdsourced footage from gigs and then aligning that with good audio feed from the desk. So a problem with doing, you know, people taking videos is the sound quality often. So it captures that experience in an exciting way with good sound. The next one we had was Buddy Bounce, which is a loyalty and engagement platform that, you know, fans can promote artists and gain points and rewards. And they're really interesting too. Then we had Joy Tunes, which is with their Piano Duster app, which is a learning, you know, how to play the piano kind of app. Mate Life Interactive, I don't know if you remember the Coldplay experiment with the gigs with the wristbands. So Make Light is doing that on phones and making it scalable for people to use on a B2B level. Musemantic, which was about creating soundtracks for films. This was interesting. So you have, like, people upload their soundtracks and you can alter the way they sound on like a scale, so you can have like angry and not angry, and it takes out elements of the soundtrack according to what you're drawing on that scale. Then there was 6-3, which was they call themselves a mobile-centric video advertising platform. It's about two-way conversations using video, 63-second videos. And then there was Spins.fm, which was a platform that aims to reinvent the radio requests using social media. So you get people requesting stuff, and it's published to the radio station's Facebook and Twitter profiles. And then you see how much momentum there is behind the track or an artist if you're on the radio station. And then there was Weezik, which is about it's kind of interactive augmented sheet music app, which was really interesting as well. So you can interact with the sheet music and you can play along to it, and it tracks your performance and you can put notes on it. And it's about taking sheet music from the shelf into the tablet environment, the interactive environment. Sure. And so we had a really good mix of judges. We had Christina Chen from DN Capital, Bertrand Bodson from EMI, Martin Mignon from Index Ventures, Tahir Bashir from Sheridan's, and Nadav Poros. Poras from Who Sampled, and they were the winners of the previous one.
Yeah.
So there's a really good mix of judges, and that's my real takeaway from this was, often we go to startup events and we see amazing tech and we go, wow, that's brilliant, but we don't think. And what these judges and the industry kind of attendants who was there brought to the table was, right, there are rights being exploited here. What are you bringing to the table in terms of a business plan?
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, and it was really interesting to see people bring that to the table. And it turns on its head what you take away, and the wow factor does go away sometimes when you realize that there's no way to back this up with revenue generation or generating new revenue streams. The winner on the night, so we had a round two, the judges voted 4 of the startups through to round two, and the startups were Body Bounce, JoyTune, Spins.fm, and Make Light Interactive. And then the audience had a text vote after a little discussion with those startups.
Yeah.
And the winner on the night, clear winner, was JoyTunes. They all did brilliantly well, and it was more about showcasing everyone, but the winner was JoyTunes. And there was a clear reason for that, I think, because you're generating a new revenue stream for the rights owners, because you can download content to play along to and learn to within the app.
Yeah.
It's a new way of engaging with music, you know, in a really fun way.
Yeah.
And there there are other apps that have done that, like, well, you know, Overland did that with Wild Chords a while back with the guitar. But I think to that audience in that room, it was quite a clear winner. Nice night. And check out all of those startups, I would say, if you have a chance.
Absolutely. And yeah, JoyTunes is great. I actually interviewed them at Medium. So the interview is live on YouTube somewhere. If you look at JoyTunes and Digital Music Trends, you should find a 10-15 minute interview and a demonstration of how the service works. And Sid, do you know any of these startups or any of them you've heard of before that you would be excited about?
Not yet.
They have to check them out.
Very exciting.
Great, awesome.
So I will make sure I check them out.
Cool. Well,
there were some interesting ones from an API point of view. You might be interested. You know, I think MakeLite were thinking about opening up to an API. JoyTunes as well, so artists could have their own bespoke apps or learning environments inside apps. And Spins FM can do the same as well. So, there's some interesting stuff from a developer point of view there, I think, too.
Awesome. Well, Sid, anything you're on to plug? Of course, we talked about Tomahawk, but anything that people should check out that you maybe made or a hack that they should go and check out?
All of the things. No.
Tell me one.
So We Make Awesome Shit is currently up for an award in the .NET Awards, which is a tech magazine. If you go to thenetawards.com, please nominate us for Best New Agency. I only set up the company just over a year ago. We're up for the New Agency Award. Check out Twilio because it's badass. And Tomahawk, which, by the way, is still not version 1. I'd just like to make everyone aware that it's still not version 1.
Yeah, 0.5, isn't it?
I think we're now up to 0.6. Oh, 0.7, okay. We've got listening rooms coming. Listening rooms is basically, it's Sound Drop or Song Drop. Sound Drop,
that's what you're,
So we've got listening rooms coming in Tomahawk, awesome. Sound Drop, Turntable FM, that kind of thing.
So are you using an API or is this your own?
Sorry.
Fell into that one.
Going back to the music discovery, I was a big fan of Turntable FM and we could use it. Then we couldn't use it over here, which I understand. Then I started to use Sound Drop and then I got involved in Tomahawk and then didn't really open my Spotify desktop client again. And so a guy called Tio has been working on listening rooms for the last few months.
Right.
And when that comes in, that's going to be epic.
Great. Awesome. Well, I think that's all for this week. Digital Music Trends has launched a new show as well a couple of weeks ago called DMP 1-to-1. It's 1-2-1. It's a bit hard to type, actually. But it focuses on one-to-one interviews. From Saturday, DMT is going to be reporting from South by Southwest. So a bunch of interviews coming on the site from there are starting next Monday. And, there's going to be next week's show is going to be a little bit different with a bunch of segments probably cut from the interviews that I'm going to do in the first few days of South by Southwest. So check out digitalmusictrends.com/SXSW for updates on that coverage. And thanks so much, guys, for coming on the show. It was great having you on.
Thanks for having us.
And thanks so much to our listeners. You can contact me on contact@digitalmusictrends.com. Have a great week and until next time.